best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall.
The best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. It's half past eight. It's half past eight New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike acts as referee in a contest of wits between the Information Please experts and our coast-to-coast listening audience. You provide the questions and our experts try to answer them. Remember, for every question used, Lucky Strike will give you not only $10 in war stamps, but a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If the question is must, you get the Junior Britannica plus a $50 war bond plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica.
The best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall.
Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information Please.
The best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall.
And now right up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. Ladies and gentlemen, spontaneous and unrehearsed as usual, Information Please brings its trio of regulars, Oscar Levant, Franklin P. Adams, and John Kieran, now presiding over a daily column in the New York Sun and other papers, and as its guest, that great Hollywood master, Alfred Hitchcock, whose new picture, Shadow of a Doubt, is thrilling large audiences now on Broadway. Now we're going to begin with a question from N. Ogintz of Detroit. What happened to a character, whether of fact or fiction, because of lying? He or she lied and something happened to him or her. Who was that? What did happen? Mr. Adams.
Well, it might have been Bluebeard's wife.
Did she lie?
She lied. Said she wasn't in that there closet.
As a matter of fact, well, what did happen to her as a result of it?
I think there was some mortality connected with it.
No, as a matter of fact, she got away with it, didn't she? Wasn't she saved? As I recall,
she was saved, but she was in trouble. She was threatened.
Well, you're the master of threats, Mr. Hitchcock. What did happen to Bluebeard's wife, remember?
Which one?
I didn't know that your acquaintance was his wife, was that? Mr. Levant?
She wound up in a ballet last year. Bluebeard's wife was a ballet.
That's that on top. All right. I was thinking of a character from the Bible. That
yes.
Mr.
Peter lied twice, then went out and wept bitterly.
Yes, there is one. And who, Mr.?
Ananias.
Ananias. What happened to him?
I don't know.
Would you like me to tell you?
Yes.
For the same money?
Yes.
He was struck dead because he lied unto God. And he was struck dead. What happened to Pinocchio, Mr. Levant?
He changed into a semi-animal form, a complete peculiar animal. I have it home, my baby's room. I don't know. What is that?
Baby. No, ask the baby. I'm sure she reads. Pinocchio's nose grew longer with each lie that he told. Now, what happened to a character, fact or fiction, because he or she pried? We've had lying. Let's have prying now. Mr. Kieran.
Well, Alice in Wonderland cried. A mouse cried in Alice.
Not cried. Pried. P-R-Y-E-D.
They said cried, huh?
Prying. Mr. Hitchcock.
Peeping Tom.
Peeping Tom, what happened to him?
When Lady Godiva rode through Coventry.
Yes.
And Tom peeped.
He got his eyes stuck out.
Yes. He was struck blind. That's quite right. And matter of fact, Mr. Adams, your first answer would have been correct for this one. Bluebeard's wife cried. Her name, by the way, in case you care to collect these things, was Fatima.
Fatima W. Bluebeard.
Fatima W. Bluebeard, yes. Her life was saved because she cried. How about it, Mr. Hitchcock?
It has anything to do with pride goes before fall.
Oh, that's Adams' specialty. You can't take that away from Adams. He needs this job.
Pride goeth before understanding, and a haughty spirit before a fall.
Hey, that's wonderful. The Reverend Frank T. Adams. I never suspected it of you, Frank. How about a character to whom something happened because he or she whied? Now, that's W-H-Y-E-D. Did too much whying. In other words, asked
Why to
Fanny
offer?
Fanny Bryce and Snooks.
That's right, Mr. Levant. Very good. And what happens to Fanny Bryce?
Well, if he can't answer her why, she'll get a encyclopedia. I don't know. She just says, why, Daddy? And,
yeah, that's right.
And then they renewed for 26 more weeks.
Oh, yeah. But not before she gets what?
Well, half a piece of candy.
Oh, no. Just the opposite.
She doesn't get a piece of candy.
That's right. She gets spanked. She gets spanking almost every week. How about this one? From Francis D. Moore of Brookline, Massachusetts. I think this will appeal to you particularly, Mr. Hitchcock, because as I understand it, you're quite an epicure. Or do you deny the self-impeachment? What part of an animal's anatomy is served when you eat the following thing? Suppose you're eating tripe.
That's the inner lining of the stomach.
Yes. Is it any good?
I've never tasted it.
You never have cared for it?
There's plenty of stuff on you can hardly notice.
The inner lining of the stomach.
It's a good rubber substitute. They wouldn't take my advice on that.
It would make very good bath.
What animal is it taken from? Unwillingly,
though. Sheep,
I
think.
Cattle, yes, that's right. Now, how about sweetbreads? If you're eating sweetbreads, what are you eating, Mr. Levant?
A brain.
Oh,
a brain. Pancreas.
That's just wishful thinking, Mr. Levant.
The pancreas.
What are pancreas, Mr. Adams?
Is it something in the throat?
Oh, no, it's a liver thing.
Well, I believe pancreas are sort of gland, aren't they?
Around the liver. A pancreatic gland.
Well, there is a gland in them. They're little odd things of no particular interest to anybody.
But very good.
Doubtless very good. They come from a calf or of a similar animal. Now, how about giblets?
In the meat shop, we should be eating appendices.
Very possibly. Giblets, gentlemen. What are giblets? Mr. Hitchcock.
Giblets are the unused part of a chicken.
Well, they're not unused if you eat them.
They're used
in our house.
We make gravy from them.
Well, if you don't make gravy from them, but eat giblets just so.
It's anatomically.
Their liver, gizzard.
That's right.
And also the heart. All those things are giblets. And as a matter of fact, very good, too. How about this one from Grace Chiaffolo of Brooklyn? This is a musical question, gentlemen. I want you to name the composer of these pieces of incidental music and the play that each adorns. Let's have the first. Got a hand at once from Mr. Levant.
Midsummer Night's Dream of Shakespeare.
Shakespeare.
Mendelssohn wrote the music
for Midsummer Night's Dream. That's quite right. Now, how about the next? Mr. Hitchcock? That was your hand, wasn't it?
Yeah, Mr. Levant.
Mr. Levant.
Mr. Hitchcock knows it. I would,
Mr. Levant.
He's awfully nice, Mr. Hitchcock, yeah.
Well, it's Lars Lien, sweet, by Bizet.
Yeah, that's quite right. Lars Lien, the prelude, by Bizet. That's quite right. Now the third and last. Mr. Levant again.
That's a September song by Kurt Weill and Maxwell Anderson.
Yes, what's the play called?
Something about Knickerbocker.
Holiday?
Well, that's it.
That's it. That's 3 out of 3, Mr. Levant, and good going. By the way, Mr. Scott, weren't you going to say Lolly's Yen by D.J. on that second one?
I was, but I didn't know the play to which it was connected. That's why I hesitated.
Oh, see, you're too cautious. On this program, we're never cautious.
You asked for the play to be named.
Well, isn't there a play called Lolly's Yen?
Maybe.
Mr. Levant, do you know?
Well,
or is it just an
opera? He didn't get paid off, do you think? He wrote incidental music for the play.
Yes. How about this from Margaret B. Rawn of Lancaster, Pennsylvania? Again, on this one, get 2 out of 3. This is about famous cases, some of the murder cases. In which famous case was the guilt fixed by the purchase of hyacinth? The purchase of hyacinth. Mr. Hitchcock.
The Crippen case.
That's quite right. Will you tell us a little about that, Mr. Hitchcock?
Well, Dr. Crippen was an American dentist who lived in London. And he was married to a music hall performer, a woman called Belle Elmore. And he gave her hyacinth. He was in love with the sex.
Hyacinth is a poison, of course.
Poison, yes. And then he eventually disposed of the remains of the body in his house in Islington in London. And then escaped with his secretary to Canada. And the case was one where wireless was used for the first time to apprehend a criminal.
That's a perfect answer, Mr. Hitchcock.
And and Dr. Clifford was arrested in the mouth of St. Lawrence by an Inspector Dew, who came aboard disguised as a pilot officer.
How was the tide running at the time? That's first rate. Now, how about this? In what famous case was guilt fixed by a ticket to Syracuse? A ticket to Syracuse.
That's in America.
Yeah,
it was. I have several.
Snyder Gray case.
That's right, Mr. Adams. It's not a Gray case. Remember how that happened?
Mr. Gray was on a
corset selling tour in Syracuse and went to a hotel there at the time.
Yes, so that was his
and
alibi.
He fled there after the ex post facto.
That's right. He tried to establish an alibi by having tickets discovered in Syracuse, indicating that he'd gone to Syracuse at the time that he was supposed to have done the murder, I suppose. Now, how about
Syracuse? Pardon? Months
you were there?
Yeah.
Gloomy, cuss, aren't you? Now, in what case was the guilt fixed by uniforms buried in sand? Uniforms buried in sand. The discovery of them established the guilt of people connected with them. Well, there's one you don't happen to know, apparently. The case of the Nazi saboteurs who were recently apprehended on Long Island and in the coast of Florida, too. They buried uniforms along with money and explosives and firearms. And uniforms were discovered, and they, as you know, were apprehended and executed. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from F. Cook of Berkeley, California? Where in literature or the theater does the action concern a glove? The action revolves around a glove. It might be, you know, poem or play, Mr. Adams?
No, I'm wrong. I won't know.
Mr. Kieran?
Well, in Browning's famous poem about the woman who threw the glove into the den of lions, in fact, 3 different poets wrote poems about that.
That's right, Mr. Kieran. Who were the 3 poets?
Well, Browning was one. I believe Leigh Hunt was
right.
Another, and I've forgotten
who. I think a German poet. Was it Schiller?
You forgot your glove.
No, there were 3, anyhow.
You forgot your glove. Da, 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 da,
that makes 4. Yeah. That wasn't Schiller, that last one, though, Mr. LeVan. I can tell that. Now, where does the action concern a garter? We move from gloves to garters. Mr. Kieran.
At the founding of the Order of the Knights of the Garter in the English court, I believe.
Yes, but that would be historical rather than in literature or the theater.
Really?
Mr. Adams.
In a play called Getting Gertie's Garter.
Yes. Who wrote the play, Mr. Adams?
I don't know, but I think Mr. A.H. Woods produced it.
And it was written by Avery Hopwood and Wilson Collison.
But I don't connect any crime with that.
No. No. You want to get crime with every question?
That's the question.
No, there's no crime involved. This is a harmless, joyful, gay question, Mr. LeVant.
There was a memorably funny sketch by Noel Coward called La Flamme, which bit with Lily and Noel Coward, in which you see her garter from time to time. It's Lily's garter.
I don't remember that, but that
was
you.
Funny doing. And other things.
Yes. Now we have a glove and a garter. Now, where does the action concern a girdle? This might be from mythology or the theater or poetry, Mr. Kieran.
Well, I think it was an attempt to get Minerva's girdle, wasn't it?
It wasn't Minerva, I don't think. Any of you remember a little more closely than Mr. Kieran does? It's almost impossible. I have to count that wrong unless you give us the exact data. Well, it was one of the tasks of Hercules, one of the 12 tasks of Hercules,
yeah,
was to,
I thought it was Minerva.
To get the girdle of Hippolyta.
Oh.
Hippolyta, the queen of the Amazons.
Then there was Ziegfeld, who wrote this thing glorifying the American girl.
Is that the play called Boy Meets Girdle? Is that the one?
The best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall.
Ladies and gentlemen, make no mistake. In a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw. No wonder that with independent tobacco experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
The best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall.
And now, with everybody's permission, we'll get back to the program. This comes from Mrs. Irving Goldman of Brooklyn, New York. I would like you to recite for us 3 proverbs or quotations, well-known sayings, that mention different servants or household workers. not by name, but by grade. Yes, Miss Adams.
Well done, thou good and faithful servant.
Yes, that's right. That's a dandy. That covers the whole field. And now, let's name a specific kind of worker, Mr. Curran.
The steward wrote, the butler squalled, and so forth, that St. Tennyson's The Sleeping Beauty, Princess, describing the reawakening of the household.
That's an unfamiliar one, or at least unfamiliar to me. Mr. Levin.
Waiter, water, waiter. I don't know.
Yeah, there was a funny song about
it. Yeah, waiter, water.
Waiter, water, water, water. Yeah, that's right, Mr.
Well,
Adams.
Well, that's ration now.
Mr. Adams?
Where are you going, my pretty maid?
Maid, yes, very good. What a bright wit you have, Mr. Adams, and Sir Karen.
They also serve who only stand and wait.
Yes, doesn't mention the waiter particularly, Mr. Adams, again.
How green was my valet?
Well, this program will be over in a little while. Now here's one from Anson Murray Harris of Washington, D.C. Here are some made-up headlines. What emperors, whether of the past or present, are involved in them? The first headline is, Duke gives emperor shellacking. Now, this refers to a real emperor, Mr. Kieran.
The Duke of Wellington on June 18, 1815.
Yes.
Daylight saving.
The Battle of Waterloo with a little aid from Lucan.
Yes. Defeated?
Napoleon.
Yes. Defeated the Emperor Napoleon. Very good. Now, how about this headline? Empress switches boyfriends. Empress switches boyfriends.
Catherine. That's played by Marlena Dietrich.
Yes. Or played by anybody.
You can understand it in her.
Catherine the Great of what country?
It used to be Russia of her time.
Yes, Russia of her time. And she was given to changing boyfriends, often in midstream. Now, here's a third and last. Emperor slapped down, king again after 5 years. Emperor slapped down, king again after 5 years. That applies to whom?
Carol of Romania was out for 5 years.
I don't know that he was ever an emperor, though.
He was slapped down.
True enough. But he never was an emperor.
All right.
There are some people who think
that
he's a queen.
That doesn't.
No, it doesn't fit. Gentlemen, Victor Emmanuel was emperor of Ethiopia and Italy from 1936 to 1941. But when the British recaptured it, of course, he became king of Italy. Neither what I would call a durable job. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3 on that. And sends us on to a question from Donald Barr of New York City. In what movie about spies? All of these questions are about movies that involve spies. In what one is a spy plot overheard by a man who is trying to recover his lost golf clubs? A spy plot overheard by a man who's trying to recover his lost golf clubs. Well, if you haven't seen the movie, you just won't know the answer.
What's the movie?
If I gave you the title, you could give me the name, Donovan.
Well, we give up. What is it?
Night Train. The one which Rex Harrison and Margaret Lockwood appeared. Remember that, Mr. Hitchcock?
I never saw it. I never got a movie.
You never go to movies. Well, there are some very good ones produced by a man named Hitchcock. If you want to go to see it, you don't go to those. Well, the rest of us make up for you. In what movie about spies does the butler show he recognizes his master by serving him a glass of milk? The butler serves a man a glass of milk, and by this gesture, he indicates that he knows who he is. Well, it's in a movie called Nazi Agent, in which Conrad Veidt appears.
Didn't see it.
Didn't see that? Say, that must be the only one you never saw, Oscar.
Well,
you must have had a cold.
That's too wrong. How about this one? In what movie is a spy ring discovered in a windmill? Spy ring discovered in a windmill.
Mr. Hitchcock's Foreign Correspondent.
Didn't you even see that one, Mr. Hitchcock?
A bit of it.
Yes, that's the only one we got right. And that sends a $50 war bond to Mr. Barr, courtesy of Lucky Strike, and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica to boot, and sends us on to a question from Laverne Verplank of Rochester, New York. Who exposed whom in the following situations? A villain was exposed by his own wife. Mr. Kieran.
Well, I think in part, Iago was exposed by his wife.
Yes, he was. What was his wife's name, Kieran?
His wife's name, I can't think of it all.
Adams generally remembers the lady's name. Mr. Adams, do you remember?
I don't remember. Mrs. I used to call her.
Amelia.
Amelia.
Amelia W. Iago. Yeah, she explains the handkerchief plot after Desdemona's death. Now, how about this one? An ex-clerk, risen to the rank of partner, is exposed by another clerk. Mr. Hitchcock?
I'm not sure. I was wondering whether it was Gold Brothers Justice.
I don't think so, but I'm not certain, and you may be quite right.
Well, that situation did occur.
That's what I'd have said.
Well, that settles. It probably is right. Mr. Chair, another answer?
I think that's in David Copperfield.
Yeah,
who is the one? Uriah Heep, who was exposed, of course, by the brilliant Mr. McCorvel.
That's right. Yes, that was the one that I remembered because that's the book I happen to have read, Mr. Hitchcock. Now, how about this one? An enemy agent is exposed by a fellow worker in an airplane factory. Mr. Levant.
Mr. Hitchcock, saboteur.
Mr. Hitchcock, saboteur, yes. Mr. Hitchcock, either you have no memory at all or you're unduly modest.
I'm afraid it's the latter.
Oh. Well, I would have thought so if you had answered differently. How about this one from Dean S. Smith of Minneapolis? Gentlemen, I want you to create for us, right on this platform here, a meal of at least three courses, each of which includes a wine or liquor in the cooking or preparation. Now, let's begin with the way, with a course that generally does begin a meal. How about it, Mr. Hitchcock?
Which includes a wine or liquor?
In the cooking or preparation of the food.
Bœuf à la mode.
Bœuf à la mode would give us the main course. What wine would be used in Bœuf à la mode?
Are there Burgundy or any leftovers?
Yes, there
are used in the kitchen.
As long as it's a red wine.
Yes, yeah, red wine.
That's quite right. Well, that gives us our entree, but usually before an entree, we have what?
You can have grapefruit with anything you want in it. Soup.
Say, that's right, you can. Mr. Adams?
You could have a soup with sherry.
What soup, though?
Very often mock turtle.
Yes, turtle soup,
no,
Mr. Sherry? Mr. Kitka?
Mock turtle.
Not mock turtle.
Regular turtle.
Real turtle.
He has never had real turtle, Mr. Hitchcock. He only knows mock turtle. Yes.
Borscht. You don't put any wine in borscht.
There is no way of improving borscht. That gives us soup or entree. Now we ought to get something to end our meal with, Mr. Hitchcock.
Oh, you can have cherries, jubilee.
How is that, Mr.?
Liqueurs.
Yeah.
In which you cook the cherries and pour the whole thing over some.
Over your face.
Yeah.
Yum.
You're making Mr. Adams faint.
You have crepe Suzette.
How do you make that?
You make this a small pancake cooked in liqueurs.
Quite a match any place you can make
it. Mr. Jared?
You're going to have old-fashioned plum pudding with the brandy burning on it.
Yes, and to judge from that equatorial waistline of Mr. Hitchcock, he has all of them. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3, and now here's Mr. Rysdale and Mr. Cross.
The best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story of what makes a better cigarette can be told in just 2 words. Fine tobacco. For in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And smokers, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. At auctions all over the South, year after year, we consistently select and buy the riper, lighter, milder Lucky Strike leaf. No wonder that with independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky 2 to 1. In choosing your own cigarette, take a tip from the experts. Remember, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw.
The best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall. Yes, the best tunes of all move to Carnegie Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Rysdale and Mr. Cross. And now a question from Leon Chase of Providence, Rhode Island. If a commanding officer were ordered to attack enemy positions with these forces, I'll name them for you, would he be operating with numerically superior or inferior forces? Now, suppose he were in command of a platoon against a section. Would he be superior or inferior to the enemy? He had a platoon, the enemy had a section. Mr. Curry.
He would be inferior to the enemy.
No, as I understand it, he would be superior.
Well, I don't know what in the world a section is, but a platoon is pretty small, I can tell you that.
Yes, but a section is apparently smaller still. It comes between a squad and a platoon.
Yeah. It's a new invention.
Well, I wouldn't have known it either if I hadn't had it on this card. He would be superior. Now, suppose he were in command of a battalion and were operating against a brigade. Mr. Hitchcock.
He'd be inferior.
He would be inferior. That's quite right. Numerically inferior. And suppose he were in command of a field army operating against an army corps. Mr. Hitchcock again.
Oh, I would say he's still inferior.
No, he would be superior in that. How did you know, Mr. Adams?
I could have guessed the same way.
But the corps is smaller than the field army.
Because a corps is smaller than a field army, that's quite right. Field army is the largest unit, as I understand it. Well, that gives us two wrong and sends a $50 war bond to Mr. Chase from the set of the Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike, and sends us on to this question from Miss Casey Adams of Montreal, Canada. This is a poetical question, gentlemen. I'm going to ask you simply to complete these quotations. Between the cradle and the grave, how can you complete the quotation? I mean, there is a real... No. Actually, the completion of the quotation gives you a rhyme. Mr. Adams, I should expect that with one of your favorite poets.
Do it again, Mr. Adams.
Between the cradle and the grave lies a haircut and a shave. From Sam Hoppenstein's Songs of Faith in the Year After Next. That gives us one wrong. Now, how about completing this one? And so betwixt them both, you see, Mr. Adams.
They licked the platter clean.
Yes. How does that begin?
Mr. and Mrs. Spratt.
Yes. And what is the whole story, Mr.
Jack Spratt could eat no fat, his wife could eat no lean, and then your part.
They have a tough time these days. Now, here's another one to complete. Between the dark and the daylight. Mr. Curran.
When the night is beginning to lower, comes a pause...
Lower.
Lower. comes a pause in the day's occupation, which is known as the children's hour.
Yes. Got you there, Mr. Adams. So it is a lower instead of lower. Mr. Adams is quite right. What does it mean? What does lower mean, Mr. Adams?
Lower.
No.
You're lucky. It's written.
Something like that, yes. Well, I guess that's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Mr. Hitchcock, for adding to the entertainment this evening. Now, in a few seconds, I'll announce next week's guests. Tonight, Lucky Strike has paid out two sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica and two $50 war bonds. And speaking of bonds, here's one way to think about them. Suppose you knew that you could shorten the war by just 1 second. Suppose that second to have been the time it took for one of the Nazi child murderers to kill your own son or brother or father. Suppose you could abolish that fatal second by the purchase of a bond. You'd buy, wouldn't you? Well, your bond purchases do shorten the war. Each bond you buy makes it possible to destroy more Nazi child murderers. Each Nazi child murderer that you kill with your bond means that the chances are increased for your own American boy to come back to you safe and sound. You tell me a better reason for buying war bonds. Next week, in addition to Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran, we will have as our guests the co-authors of that charming bestseller, Our Hearts Were Young and Gay, Cornelia Otis Skinner and Emily Kimbrough. Remember to send letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.